Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fourth and final edition of the CBI's podcast series on international trade and investment opportunities in Latin America. My name is John Bleed, and I work as a senior policy advisor in the CBI's international team, and I'm based in Washington, D.C.
Our Washington office primarily covers the U.S. market, but it also has responsibility for Canada and Mexico, as well as the entirety of Latin America. That might sound like a lot, but this podcast series is designed to shrink that a bit and reflect the enormous potential that we think CBI members stand to gain across the multitudes of markets in Latin America. I'm joined today by colleagues from three of these markets, Brazil, Mexico, and Colombia, to discuss opportunities in advanced manufacturing and where UK businesses can learn about opportunities for investment in this sector. Technological innovation is so obviously reshaping the way that business works. It's affecting the way that we make things, the way that we travel and even think. You have issues like robotics or artificial intelligence, automation, 3D printing. All of these are forming what's kind of part of what's been tagged Industry 4.0 or the Fourth Industrial Revolution. But despite the rapid spread of this technology, we've seen Latin America historically progress at a bit of a slower rate than other regions of the world. However, in recent years, this is starting to change, and we've most certainly seen the region start to catch up. We've got governments across Latin America realizing that investment in these initiatives helps their countries grow exponentially. It improves the lives and the future of their people. You know, these are areas like biotechnology, digital medicine, renewable energy, fintech. These are all fields that have enormous growth potential. So today I have representatives from Brazil, Colombia, and Mexico, as I mentioned, join me in this podcast to showcase some of the main advances that have been made in this manufacturing, in the manufacturing sector in Latin America, and the opportunities for British businesses and specifically CBI members to make inroads in these markets. So I'll start with Brazil, where I'm joined by Martin Holmes, who is the Chief Commercial Officer of Embraer Commercial Aviation. As an industrial company in Brazil with tremendous worldwide visibility in aerospace, my goal with having you on is to show the example of Embraer and how the company is approaching the topic of advanced manufacturing in such a demanding sector. Every 10 seconds, an Embraer aircraft is taking off from somewhere in the world. It's got about 145 million passengers carried every year, and it's delivered over 8,000 aircraft to customers in its 52-year existence. You know, out of all of its commercial jets operating in almost 100 airlines across the globe, all of them are assembled and designed in Brazil with a very complex supply chain with thousands of components and services. But as we've progressed in the 21st century, the global nature of supply chains have changed and have created some new challenges based in Brazil. So Embraer is looking today to compete with new concepts like we mentioned, Industry 4.0 and advanced manufacturing. So my first question to you, sir, would be, Embraer has been developing on average one aircraft per year in the last two decades. What would you say has been the biggest challenge in managing such a complex supply chain from Brazil?
Good afternoon, John. Thank you very much for the opportunity and welcome to all the other guests here. Look, how do I see Embraer? We're a technology integrator for a start. We work with the best in class around the world, combining components and systems with a sophisticated supplier base. Okay, so we need to bring that all together. And that includes at the very start with like integrated product development. So that starts really early on, right, where you're developing the aircraft and you need to communicate effectively across all these different suppliers to progress each project so the aircraft comes together. And as that design moves forward and the aircraft starts to take a physical shape, you need the right logistics to support the manufacturing process. And that's really bringing in manufacturing very early on in the design phase of the aircraft. You have very different geographical locations, different time zones, and you need to work with that to be able to respond and innovate together. Aircraft design can be an iterative process. For instance, 20 years ago, we brought in the VRC, the Virtual Reality Center, creating a digital environment to enable engineers to interact with different parts of the globe. And more recently, as you see our aircraft coming off the production line, they are being continuously tested as they come together. It's not a case of just testing it at the end of the line. As they're testing it, we use technology to make sure the aircraft work throughout that whole process. So that's been our key success with this complete supply chain, using, as you mentioned, the various Industry 4.0 facilitators, bringing that together with advanced manufacturing and communicating across the supplier base enables us to address those challenges.
Fascinating. No, it's a really, really good overview. I appreciate that. One thing I actually wanted to kind of follow up on with that, you know, we've talked 25 years ago, Embraer's company that may have been perceived as, you know, specifically being in Brazil for, you know, a labor cost advantage, benefiting from lower costs in that area. Is that still the case? Or do you think that the company is looking for other strategies to remain competitive in this kind of new transformative economy?
Sure. I think first and foremost, you need to remember that aircraft manufacturing is highly advanced manufacturing, okay? Facilitated by highly skilled engineers. It's not really a labor-driven manufacturing base. It's high technology, highly skilled. So what we demand is precision, quality, and flexibility to continually innovate for what our customers need and require, okay? So innovation to me going forward is the key differentiator here in the current days. Okay. So we need fast and efficient understanding of what the market wants to buy and what we need to develop, how do we need to manufacture it, and the services that need to address it in operation. Our customers need reliability, they need right first time, and that's what that high technology is where we need to deliver, and that's kind of our USP. I talked earlier about the highly skilled engineers. Well, you need to invest in those people. So we've got a good investment in educational infrastructure that you've seen that at the high schools programs we have. And we also have this PE, engineering specialization. So that was established 20 years ago. Now that's put 1,000 engineers through master's program. And so actually we have some of the finest engineers globally working in Embraer. Okay, and then you align that with Industry 4.0 and advanced manufacturing, and that's where you get the key to the strategy. So you've got digital solutions that speed up and developing new aircraft. Now, we've developed almost a new aircraft once a year since the turn of the century, okay, be it in commercial aviation, executive and defense. And we've been able to do that with the technologies we've brought into our process. That includes things like digital twins, you know, the allowing us to model products and services to support the design decisions as that product is evolved. Okay. So Embraer is known for saying we will produce an aircraft by a certain date, and we do, right? We're very reliable and consistent on that, on time, on specification, on budget. That's what we're known at. And, there are further steps that we need to work with the operation of the customer, and we use Industry 4.0 in that, in monitoring the customer's reliability as well. So sort of addressing that concern, it's high-tech game, and we work on a global basis advancing these technologies.
Oh, really, really interesting. Thanks. My final question for you is kind of, we're looking forward a little bit here instead of backwards. You mentioned the need to be flexible and also kind of understanding the needs of your customer base. So how do you see advanced manufacturing and Industry 4.0 setting Embraer apart, being a source of competitive differentiation for the company in the next few years?
So aerospace is no exception to the smart industries that we see around, right? It's, as you mentioned, it's the continuous need to innovate. And advanced manufacturing, they're supporting us in the way we do things. Technology allows us to extract more and more value from the data. And with the support of AI, artificial intelligence, and machine learning, we're able to keep advancing quicker and faster. We talked about being a market leader. We're the market leader below 150 seats globally. Okay. How do we maintain that and exceed that? We must continue to invest in understanding how our technologies can support us in bringing our customers new services and that ability to interpret, manage the data to be facilitated by the customers. So, for example, predictive maintenance, okay? So there's no surprises. So you collect all the data. The aircraft becomes this living and breathing information providing organism that enables you to say, not to react to a problem, but to predict when there might be something and facilitate when that maintenance can be carried out. So you can maintain the high utilization of the aircraft. But thinking about also the next 20 years, we're all aware of the environmental challenges that are before us, okay? And some of our net zero carbon targets are like carbon neutrality in our operations by 2040, carbon neutral growth from 2022, products with zero carbon aviation by 2050. These are all things that we need to innovate to get to. And I see a lot of this advanced manufacturing and Industry 4.0 enabling us to innovate in that space. And I do believe Embraer is at the forefront of that. We've recently announced last year the Energia family of products that we're evolving with the industry as a whole. EVE, the electrical vertical takeoff and landing technology. These are all innovative technologies that are facilitated by the advanced manufacturing and 4.0.
Brilliant. Well, for those of you who know, for those who know me, know that I'm a bit of an aviation nerd myself. I've had extended family who have worked in the aviation world in the U.S. For many years. So this is a conversation that I'm sure I'm going to want to pick up with you offline and continue. So thank you very much, Martin. But I believe we're going to move on to Colombia now. And my second guest is Mauricio Concha, who is the investment promotion manager at Invest Pacific, which is the investment promotion agency for Valle de Coca, which is a department of southwestern Colombia. A little bit of background here. We saw Colombia's kind of economic strength on display kind of coming out of COVID, allowing it to manage the pandemic well. Its GDP grew in 2021 10.6%, which is almost 3 points more compared to 2019. Colombia is actually predicted to grow by another 4.5% in 2022. It's got amongst the least restrictive FDI environment in the entire region, even less so than the U.S. and Canada. And the previous 5 years, we've seen over $53 billion flow into the country from foreign sources in non-energy and non-mining sectors, just extremely significant. Colombia also boasts a pretty robust FTA with the United States, and the western part of the country's geostrategic position is kind of granting businesses a good position to reshore to the U.S. and really the entire Pacific Rim. So one of the things that's kind of underscoring this is its FDI strategy known as friendshoring, which is consisting of using Colombia as a production, logistics, and distribution hub for kind of the entire Americas and for the Western Hemisphere. So that the term friendshoring refers to kind of these tax facilities and benefits that are given to countries for some long-term projects. And I'm very eager to get into the discussion with our guest here. So Mauricio, my first question to you is, why would you say that Colombia is such a cost-effective destination for foreign investment, and specifically for kind of these manufacturing product operations?
Good afternoon, John, and thank you very much for the invitation here. And hello also to Martin and Iker, my colleagues here today. Thank you very much for your question. So cost effectiveness. I will highlight 6 points of our value proposition here in Colombia, and specifically in Valle del Cauca, the region that I represent. One of them will be the location. You know, Colombia is located right in the middle of the Americas. We're 6 hours away by plane to Canada, and also 6 hours away from Buenos Aires in Argentina. So right in the middle in the Americas, with access to the oceans in the Caribbean or the Atlantic and the Pacific. So location to access the markets. So it's easy from here to serve the markets in the whole Americas. When I say the Americas, I mean Canada, from Canada to Argentina, not only the US. So location will be the first cost effectiveness thing that you will have to consider when investing in Valle del Cauca in Colombia. The other one will be our free trade agreements. We have free trade agreements with more than 65 countries in the world, including all of the European Union countries, of course the UK, the British countries, and the US, as the one you mentioned already. So that one is a very robust one, which benefits from companies that can come here, produce here in Colombia, and export from here to those markets. And actually to all of the markets in the Americas, from Canada to Argentina again, we have a preferential access. The other one will be our free trade zones. We have this law that is called the free trade zones law, which are industrial and logistic parks that are created for companies to establish within that area, and that area is considered like for tax things as part of outside of Colombia. So you don't have to pay, you know, duties or value-added tax for goods that you bring into a free trade zone. And also you will get some extra tax benefits in terms of income tax and other benefits. So that's also very important. The other one would be access to qualified human talent at very competitive costs. The labor cost here in Colombia is very competitive. And not only that, but we have, you know, social benefits and social security in general at very reasonable rates here. So labor costs here are very, very competitive. Then also the production cost. I will highlight here utilities. You have access to not only very clean energies, but also very competitive costs in energy, and also land and building, and you know, to establish your facility here at a very cost-effective production cost. And the last one will be access to supply chains. It's very easy from here to get raw materials and products and goods, to transform them here, and from here export them to other countries. So that would say what I will highlight in terms of cost effectiveness here in Colombia.
Now, that's a really, really interesting overview, and I share some of the sentiment about logistics and travel times as an American working, you know, in the European space, having to explain how big my country is and how big the U.S. is, and I understand how big, you know, really the entire South American market is. So Colombia's positioning there is extremely interesting. I guess specifically, kind of my next question would be on the idea of friendshoring that I brought up earlier. What does that strategy really consist of, and what does it mean, kind of in practice?
Okay, so the nearshoring strategy is the strategy of bringing production, you know, that was offshoring before, nearshore. Nearshore means near the market. The main market here would be the American market, the U.S. market. So when we say the nearshoring strategy, it has been taking place for so long. It started when IT companies that had, you know, BPO operations offshore, and they had different difficult times to manage their operations in India, for example. So they started to do the nearshoring strategy, to implement it by bringing those operations closer to at least the same time zone. So that's what the first thing happened. But then, you know, with COVID, there was a very, very strong difficult in the supply chains. And with the container ship prices that we have, that we're facing today, there's also a logistic problem in the moment. So what we think is that companies can benefit from bringing their operations. I don't say all of their operations that they have in Asia. I don't mean they have to close their operations in Asia and bring them there. But what they can do is bring part of their operations to Colombia, and from here, being near shore, serve the markets in the Americas. And this apply to all of the companies in the world, actually, and of course to British companies, because what they can do is simply bring some operation here and take advantage of the cost effectiveness that I already mentioned to, by doing so, serving the markets in the Americas. So that's a point that we want to highlight here. And I think that it's a big opportunity, not only, as I said, for companies that are in Asia, but also for companies that are in Europe and in other parts of the world that don't want to have the risk of the supply chain that we're facing today. And in terms of the friendshoring strategy, which is the one that we have, that, as we call it here in Colombia, Colombia has a national entity government that is called ProColombia, which is the entity that is in charge of promoting exports and investment in Colombia. So what they have created is this friendshoring strategy, meaning that what we want to bring companies here to take advantage of this opportunity, and also it is a strategy that is based in the ecosystem of all the stakeholders that we have here. So it's not only the national government; you can also find law firms and free trade zones and investment promotion agencies like us. We are all aligned in the same direction, working to make this possible.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. And on that note, when it comes to manufacturing, what would you say are some examples of friendshoring in the manufacturing sector that have occurred specifically in the Western area, in Valle de Cauca and your area specifically?
Okay, so well, we as Indes Pacific, we have been operating for almost 12 years now. We have helped over 150 companies establish their operations here and expand their operations here as well. We just recently received, for example, a Brazilian company that has that is in the home goods market. What they are doing is they had a big market in Brazil, but as you know, Brazil has a lot of advantages. But I think we're complementary to them because we have access to the Pacific, which they don't, and we have other things that they can take advantage of us. So, for example, this company, what they're doing is bringing their operation here to Valle del Cauca, and from here they will start exporting. So that's one example. The other example that is very, very interesting is one that we have. I don't know if you know the brand Hero. It's a motorcycle company. It's actually the largest in the world. They're from India. And what they did is they opened their first production facility outside of India here in Valle del Cauca a couple of years ago to serve the markets in the Americas. You know, motorcycles are very hot here in Latin America. It's a means of transportation that is very, very common. So what they did is they thought, we're going to bring an operation to Valle del Cauca, to Colombia, use their free trade agreements, their lower production cost, to serve the markets in the Americas. And not only that, those examples, but we also have many British companies that are here in the region that have been here operating for many years. For example, we have mass consumption companies like Reckitt Benckiser or Unilever that they have their operations here, and from here they serve the Andean markets, the Pacific Alliance markets. So it's very funny when you go to to Uruguay and you buy some shampoo and you read and it's made in Cali, Colombia. So it's really interesting that you can see that, and not only to Uruguay but also to the U.S. market. So we have many British companies that are established here in different sectors. As I mentioned in the beginning, the most important ones started in the IT sector because that was the easier operation to move to make the nearshore operation easier. But now we're starting to see more and more manufacturing companies bringing their operation to Valle del Cauca. Even though I think that there's still a big opportunity that British companies should take. And I think we're still missing many important British companies that are probably not seeing this opportunity yet, or we haven't been able or very organized in terms of being able to communicate the opportunity in the good way so British companies can take advantage of that. So I think there's a lot of road that we can still walk, and I am very grateful to having this opportunity here today.
Well, that's actually a perfect lead-in, I think, to my final question to you, which would be for British manufacturing companies that are not currently involved in Colombia yet, but they might have an existing market either in the U.S. or in the rest of Latin America. You know, how can they take advantage of these kind of investment promotion opportunities and agencies such as ProColombia or Invest Pacific that you're with, that they provide, kind of the opportunities that they provide under this friendshoring strategy in the future?
Yeah, so what we do is we work very closely with ProColombia. ProColombia is, as I mentioned, the national government investment promotion agency, and we are the regional investment promotion agency. So what we do is we work together with them. ProColombia has actually an office in London that British companies can reach out to them, and from them, what we do is like they bring it to London, they talk to the people in London, and then they connect them with us. And then we take them by hand and bring them to the region, show them the opportunities, show them where they can establish, etc. Two things that are very important. We work free of charge. So companies won't have to pay us a penny for the services we provide, because our goal is to create economic development and jobs. And we do it by facilitating investment, foreign investment here into Colombia. So that's the first important thing. And the other one is confidentiality. Many companies need to have, to sign NDA agreements or different things to to be able to talk about their projects, so we can sign those agreements and work with them with strict confidentiality. So I think these efforts, the efforts that we're doing here today, the one with CBI and the one that is Latia actually in the UK doing today, are very important for us to be able to promote our region, our country, and for British companies to learn this opportunity that they have to take.
Brilliant. And for all members listening, I'm also happy to take the time to introduce the Pro Columbia London office. If there's interest, we have the ability to do that. So thank you so much, Mauricio. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Finally, I'd like to introduce my last speaker here, which is Mr. Ikeo Jimenez, who is the head of global investments at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Mexico. We're going to kind of bring in the Mexican perspective here, specifically as it comes to automation in the automotive sector. This is a trend that's gained steam in Mexico's manufacturing industry recently. It's increasingly present in plants across the country. And this has gotten the attention of major UK peer competitors, such as the US, Germany, and Japan. These markets are very attracted to Mexico's very diverse and complex supply chain in the automotive and vehicle industry. It makes up a very significant part of their national exports. In Mexico, what we're seeing is an increasingly a place for the export of finished products with high value, not just simply kind of components or parts. And, you know, we really see kind of in this advanced manufacturing discussion, the two main components of these technologies that I'm sure we'll get into in this discussion. The first really being processing technologies like metal printing, 3D printing, mold machining, metal stamping, things that just are really, you know, components of the 21st century economy. And the second being kind of digital systems, which helps track manufacturing processes. It helps make things more efficient, allows manufacturers to identify workflow problems, minimize material costs, and kind of just make operations more efficient. And what we're seeing is pretty tangible results of kind of the implementation of those two items. You know, manufacturing employs over 9 million people in Mexico, and it's just a significant part of kind of the local economic makeup. So, Iker, I believe my first question for you would actually be about the USMCA, which is something that our members know quite a bit about. Here in Washington, we covered it extensively when it was being renegotiated, knowing that North American supply chains have impacts for European firms, specifically British firms. So what would you say the role of advanced manufacturing is in Mexico in the context of this newly renegotiated trade agreement, USMCA, between U.S., Canada, and Mexico?
Thank you, Jonah. First of all, I would like to thank you for the invitation, for being here, and also saying hello to my colleagues, Martin Combs, Mauricio Concha, Paula Espina. Mauricio, I would like to confess that hearing about Valle del Cauca brought me very good memories to my mind when I used to live in Colombia 20 years ago. So it is very good to hear that there's a promotion agency of Valle del Cauca. Very good to hear that. Now, going straight to the question here, I believe that to answer this question, I will talk about two specific sectors, the automotive and the aerospace industries, in the light of the USMCA. Mexico has become, in the last decades, an important manufacturing country, and notably, but not exclusively, in the automotive industry. And the new trade, this new trade agreement with the US and Canada, has set new framework of specific rules and regulations for the sector. The USMCA is a trade agreement that entered in force back in July 1st, 2020, as a follow-up to NAFTA, of which was in force since January 1st in 1994, actually. While the USMCA maintained the same main objectives of favoring the integration of different sectors of the three national economies of North America, it is also has a component, it has incorporated novel elements to update the commercial relationship. Talking about the automotive industry, among the new rules set by this treaty are this increase in the regional content value that we need to have here, which indicates to what extent a good and its components have been produced in a member country. While the NAFTA required about 62.5% of this regional content. In the manufacture of vehicles, of course, now the USMCA has raised this content to 66%. For auto parts, talking about, again, the regional content value, it is set between 65% and 75%, depending on whether they are complementary, main, or essential components. This is important to have in mind. This regional content that you must be part of this important range to comply with these percentages. Then there's a new rule, which is that 70% of the steel and aluminium with which the cars are manufactured must come from the North America region. This change is a regional protective measure that forces the three countries to produce in the member countries and use local resources here. In terms of labor, the new treaty establishes a new requirement of value of labor content, which establishes that at least 40% of the value added to a car must have been made in manufacturing plants where all the workers are paid at least $16 per hour. It is 30% for light vehicles and 45% fixed for heavy units. This is on the treaty. And with the right to apply a punitive fee of 25% of non-compliance. This is something that companies must have in mind in order to produce in Mexico and to be part of this treaty, to use the USMCA to have this interaction with the US and Canada. This is not like boundaries or a problem for the manufacturers. It is actually an incentive for being part of this region that is one of the most dynamic around the world. Now, regarding the automotive industry, the Foreign Promotion Office that I am in charge of, to take full advantage of the USMCA over the long run, we launched in February 2022 in Mexico City the initiative of the Transport Electrification Group. This is a group that is led by the Minister of Foreign Affairs here, where this new agency is located, at the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Mexico, and together with the U.S. authorities and representatives of the industry and the academia of both countries. And this is in order to help the manufacturing industry transition into producing electric cars, leaving behind the production of traditional cars in order to map in a better way what's happening with the production of electric cars in Mexico. That is something that we are doing in this alliance with the University of California, and the goal is to have this roadmap by the end of the year, and it's going to be a roadmap that is going to be open for everyone. And now, regarding the aerospace, the aviation industry, which is another interesting and relevant advanced manufacturing sector to point out here, the industry has shown a consistent growth in value, and it is expected to reach about $358 billion by 2023. Already, foreign companies in the sector have come to Mexico because they find quality in supplies, they find quality in labor, and the opportunity to market their products with the facilities granted by the USMCA in the North American market. And now to wrap up this question, I will say that while all these changes that come from the USMCA, from the rules of origin to wages in the Mexican industry and others like the collective bargaining agreements with unions, set very important challenges that add up to others of technological nature mainly, such as the transition into the manufacturing new technologies, such as the electric cars, like I mentioned. But Mexico is well prepared to address these challenges and to adapt to the new conditions for the international market. And it has built up competitiveness in its industry derived from the geographical location, the advantages of all the treaties that we have around the world to have access to the 60% of the GDP worldwide. We have a very good infrastructure, talking about the roads, talking about ports, airports. And of course, we have this amazing human capital capabilities built up over years? I believe that's what I would like to say about this question, John.
No, thank you very much. Tremendously helpful. I think from someone who's based in Washington, I think it's very easy to hear about how the automotive supply chains between the U.S. and Mexico are so integrated already. But the piece specifically about aerospace and the high growth potential there, I think is very and particularly interesting. So perhaps the two of us can pick up in a separate conversation about that more later. Sure. I think, for a question also related to USMCA, just because I do want to keep on this a little bit. It obviously is presenting some challenges for all three sides. You mentioned some of the initiatives, obviously, and opportunity that the Mexican government is putting forward. But when you're looking forward to, the coming decade, perhaps, what do you think are the competitive advantages that it will bring to Mexico and as it is fully kind of rolled out and implemented?
Thank you, Jen. So, first of all, we need to take a look to the current geopolitical context. And I mean particularly the tensions between the U.S., which is the largest economy in the world, and of course they are our neighbors, the tension between the U.S. and China. The U.S. is and has been historically by far our largest trading partner in Mexico. And we are their second only after Canada, while we are followed by China, despite the tensions and trade battles over import duties and tariffs impacting businesses between both countries. So in the middle of these trade wars and the protective new regulations, Mexico can and is taking advantage of its strong trade relationship with the U.S., which has been consolidated by the USMCA. Talking about, for example, location and logistics. First of all, Mexico's location and logistics infrastructure provide a very important advantage over the countries that are not part of the region, of course, and to this trade deal in particular, the USMCA again. For U.S. companies, Mexico's location offers huge advantages. It is easy for managers at the U.S. companies to visit facilities in Mexico on a regular basis. You could even get there back in a day, And unlike other manufacturing countries around the world, say spending at least half a day just to get to Asia, for example, and travel to Mexico doesn't require as much advantage of planning. You just need to take a plane and you're in the country within in the worst case, 5 hours, you're in Mexico. Talking about Mexico City, if you're looking for different locations in the north of the country, those times get shorter. For example, when quality issues happen here, it is relatively easy to address them when production is in Mexico. Products can be returned to be repaired or replaced, and managers can visit the plant to fix a problem. Quality issues is in other parts of the globe, which may occur more often due to the distance and communication barriers, and more challenging to fix at the moment. But more importantly, in terms of shipping, Mexico offers big advantages, making it quicker and cheaper. For example, according to Investing Daily, it could cost about $7,000 to ship a 40-foot container from Asia. But it just takes about $2,800 from Mexico to do the same movement. I mean, if your facilities are in one of the border cities, it can only take about 24 or 48 hours to get it finished, the goods from the plant to the destination in the U.S. Those same goods could take up to 3 weeks, for example, to arrive from Asia. Now, going to the terms of labor, Mexico is competitive here because it has a highly skilled force. And we have all the human capital that is necessary. They are prepared in a very technical way in Mexico because we have developed important universities that are focused on different industries, I would like to say, for example, we have a university, an aerospace university in Querétaro that is in the center of our country. And this workforce, mainly of whom there are at least partly bilingual, they also speak English here. And they have this easiness. This makes very easy to make this communication with anyone around the globe. Also, Mexico's labor force is relatively young. Well, let's say, for example, in some countries in Asia, they are aging and declining their age due to its family planning policies, for example, in some countries. And despite this, labor costs are very competitive in Mexico. For years, wages in China, there's a good example in China, and in other manufacturing countries in Asia, where generally they are much lower, than Mexico's. And now manufacturing sector, manufacturing labor cost in Mexico is about 20% lower than in China. When talking about the intellectual property, that is another advantage in Mexico. Mexico has a strong reputation for protecting intellectual property rights. By contrast, some other countries in Asia have been frequently involved in intellectual property court cases. So this is an important task that we have taken from the Mexican government to protect all the intellectual property, all the industrial property from the companies that are trusting our company, that are trusting our country, for their investments. So I believe those are the most important advantages here. Of course, just leaving behind the geographical location, the treaties that we have, the ports that we have, the access to the both oceans and North America.
No, it's a tremendous point, especially about the logistics front. I mean, we work, as an aside, our office works very closely with the British government in Texas, the Consul General in Houston, and it's almost certainly one of the first things that they'll bring up in a meeting is their logistics connection to Mexico. So just note for the audience that, from an American perspective and for diplomatic presence in the U.S., and especially in the Southwest, close to the Mexican border, these are something that stakeholders on the other side of the border are considering as well, is how to integrate this significant kind of, labor cost, labor skills, and potential that Mexico has to offer. So thank you for that update and very, very good overview. From my final question to you, I guess it's a little bit more open-ended, but what better to kind of end this session with a bit of a broad question. What would you say is Mexico's main strategy to attract investment in advanced manufacturing in the coming years? We've mentioned USMCA a bit, but kind of what more besides that is the government planning on doing?
Sure. I believe that the creation of this new agency, and that is a global investment agency from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, it is one of the first steps that this administration is taking in order to boost all the international economic promotion of Mexico. Mexico and the Economic Promotion Office that I am in charge of, we have several initiatives in progress to attract investment in strategic advanced manufacturing sectors. I believe that one of the most important projects that we are taking here, it is called the Prospective Atlas. The complete name is Prospective Territorial Industrial Atlas for the Promotion of Investment. This is a document that is open for everyone. You can Google Prospective Atlas or in Spanish, Atlas Prospectivo Territorial Industrial, and you can download the complete document. And there's also an executive summary in English for everyone. And soon, in the next months, we're going to have the English version of this document. So this document, it is something that we made in collaboration with the United Nations agencies, UNIDO and UN Habitat, where we identify five strategic sectors and regions in the country with proven potential to develop them. Which are the sectors? Well, the first one, it is the manufacture of wind turbines. The second one, it is the pharmaceutical. The third one, it is the aerospace. The fourth one, it is the agro-industrial focused of products on vanilla and chocolate. And the fifth sector is the petrochemical one. This is in order to further develop and strengthen the value chains at national and international level. Like I said, this document is made with a prospective point of view. We have received comments about, and what about the automotive? And what about the electric, the electronic, the medical devices? Well, those sectors are working very good here. What we began to make is we had at the beginning 27 sectors to start with. And we said, okay, maybe we won't have the time to make the analysis of 27 sectors. We have to make a top five. These are the top five sectors that has this perspective or this perspective to grow in Mexico within the next years. With a regional and urban planning approach, we identified these five economic corridors with the potential of for development as we determined to be territorially connected to each of the strategic industries and the sectors. I mean, with this, it is not only talking about making analysis from an economical and financial point of view. This atlas includes factors such as the social one, the environmental one, the urban and territorial one that allows companies to be more able to comply with the requirements of the new investments that they are bringing. Sometimes they are most of the times they would like to comply with UN agencies, with the SDGs, with Agenda 2030, and this is the way that they can do it, because all this information is included in this atlas. This effort represents a new paradigm for industrial development for Mexico that has not been seen in decades. And in the same time, environmental issues, social welfare, and improvement in the quality of life of the population are being addressed in a comprehensive way. I mean, this atlas has such a detailed information that it even has this diagnosis about the availability of schools for the children of the workers in the regions that are diagnosed it in the document. This is the most important one. And just to close this question, we also have this roadmap, like I mentioned in the first question. This roadmap, it is made in order to help the suppliers of the value chain that we have now. This we wouldn't like to leave behind all the suppliers that are tier two or three in the value chain. We need to help them to keep on going on this transition to make the electric cars. So we are helping through this roadmap that is created, like I said, with the University of California to help them and to make them make the transition easier for them. I believe those are the most important projects that we are developing, having this map of sectors that we are focused on right now. And that doesn't mean that those sectors are only the only ones that we pay attention to in this area. We pay attention to any sector that would like to come to Mexico to invest. We are helping many companies from other sectors too. So these projects are helping us just to focus on what to do every day.
Tremendous overview. Thank you for that. And especially, you know, looking forward to the English translation of the Atlas project that you mentioned, specifically kind of what is it focused on the growth potential for areas maybe outside this. And you mentioned those traditional powerhouses, you know, automotive, medical devices, which, again, are tremendous interest to the UK. But looking kind of beyond that, too, will be very exciting, I think, long term.
Thank you very much for listening to this podcast series on Latin America and the investment opportunities for CBI businesses that exist on this side of the Atlantic. For more information about these topics or to get in touch with some of these speakers, please contact a member of the CBI's international policy team. Thank you very much.